Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Weekend Water Cooler. I'm your host, Jean Bolduc, and I have joining me today Margaret Dardis. Am I pronouncing this correctly?
That's right, Dardis.
I should have asked you that before we went on. Margaret is here to talk with us today about a difficult topic, a surprising topic, and that is human trafficking. And it is a silent crisis, really, in the country. And it's and folks, it's right here in Chapel Hill. It's something that we need to be aware of, and we need to kind of learn the signals and watch for things. And it's the same old, that if you see something, you should say something. So Margaret is going to kind of walk us through how we should recognize this phenomenon, what there is that we can do about it. And we're going to start out by talking about the scope of the problem in the first place and how you came to become so aware of this. So take it away.
Well, the problem is huge, and very few people recognize it or know anything about it. My husband actually asked me last night, just how big a deal is this?
Right.
And I've been worrying about it and working on it for over 10 years, and he still had to ask. Just in terms of statistics, the International Labor Organization estimates that 20.9 million people have been trafficked. That's a lot of people.
That's worldwide, right?
Yes.
Golly Moses.
It's worldwide and in the U.S. $150 billion industry annually, and that makes it right up there, rivaling drug trafficking and illegal drug running.
This is a competition you don't want to be in.
No, it isn't. Mm. And it's not necessarily third. It depends on the
right. Year. I'm sure it varies from year, right, from year to year.
And then the fact that always startles me is that North Carolina is consistently in the top 10 states for reported cases of trafficked people.
And we were talking about this before we started, that this can be kind of a good news, bad news thing, that it could be that it's very difficult, in social science, to be absolutely certain if that's because the reporting mechanisms are more successful and that's why there's more reporting, or if there are higher incidents or some combination of the two. It's probably combination of the two, better systems.
Yes.
And more reporting. I know that commonly been the case with sexual assaults and reports of child abuse, that the easier you make it for people to report these things and the less traumatic and stigmatized, that you tend to get better reporting, which means that at least initially the reports go up, but they should stabilize at some point. So I wonder if we're there yet. This is just something that's so in the shadows that I just don't know that we're really there yet for reaching the peak of a rise in reporting that occurs on account of there being better and more available reporting. Trafficking is not something, I guess, unless it's a child, that one is obligated to report by law, or is it?
I don't think there's an obligation except a moral obligation to report.
Well, the reason I'm asking that way is that with child abuse, a lot of people are aware of mandatory reporting, and they think of that being something that only falls on doctors and teachers and people who work with children, a pediatrician, who have a license, who would lose that license if they failed to report suspected child abuse. But the fact is that in North Carolina, everybody's obligated to report suspected child abuse. And if you see something and you don't say something and it traces back that you knew about it, you can be in a lot of trouble in this state. I'm thinking that if you discover a minor child who's involved in sex trafficking, to me, at least, in the world of Jean's Law School, mm-hmm. which is a very small world, that's pretty clear child abuse to me. I mean, if it's something that's going on, in this state, certainly, it's de facto child abuse, isn't it?
Oh, at least it's a criminal activity,
right?
And and beyond the legal requirements, I think there's a strong moral imperative,
right,
that we
Without
do something about that.
Without
that
a
we
doubt,
we do something about it, because often law enforcement depends on indirect notification, the tips,
right,
from citizens.
Right.
And so it's an obligation I think we all have to learn about this, to learn to recognize the symptoms and to do something about it if we're ever going to make a difference.
Right. So we're going to repeat this number more than once, 1-888-373-7888. This is the National Human Trafficking Hotline. I assume that you can do reporting as well as
That's right.
getting information from them if you think you're seeing something and you want to get some more information, you can get it from there.
Yeah, that's right. And victims can call that line, too.
Right. Okay. And they can call for help.
Yes.
In a way that's that's not a 911 call, but
that's right.
could lead to one anyway. So.
That's right.
Okay, well, that's good. We'll repeat that, and that'll be on our website. So so we want our listeners to be aware of that. Tell us how you came to be. You told me about a flight that you were on that you've looked back on, and you felt like you saw something, and you didn't.
And I didn't do anything.
You've had the experience that I'm sure many, many people have had, which is that you saw something, and you just thought intuitively, that's not right, and now you probably realize in retrospect what you were seeing. Tell us that story.
Well, over 15 years ago now, I was on a flight from Dallas to RDU, to North mm-hmm. Carolina. And there were two young men next to me who looked to me to be Hispanic. The flight attendant gave me a bunch of crackers, and I wasn't hungry, so I right. offered it to these fellows who took them right away.
Right.
And then they spoke no English, clearly. One of them reached over and pulled out a laminated map of the United States right. and held it in front of me, clearly asking where we were. And he didn't know where he had left from, and he didn't know where he was going.
And he didn't know where the flight was going.
He had no idea where the flight was going. And
right.
that's really one of the symptoms they tell you to look for is people who don't know where they are.
You know, that's with the information that we're deluged with at every turn in our society, it's really hard to imagine that somebody can be walking around and not know where they are. But if somebody picked me up and dropped me off somewhere in Mexico, I wouldn't have any idea where I was.
No, you wouldn't. And these fellows didn't speak any English.
Mm-hmm.
They looked healthy. They looked happy. And so they very well may have been lured into labor trafficking with
right.
the promise of jobs. But once they get here, often their papers are taken away from them and they're put in very difficult situations. So
right.
over the last 20 years, I've thought of those two guys and hoped that everything was fine. And,
goodness.
You know,
yeah.
I didn't know what to look for then or
right.
what I would have done. I might have given them a hotline number and said,
right.
you know, tried to imply
right.
that if they were, you know, if they needed it, there
right.
were people to help.
Right.
I think that's what I would do now
yeah.
in that situation.
I mean, so, you know, gosh, anybody with a smartphone could find, you know, I bet Siri could get that number for you
mm-hmm.
if you asked for that
oh,
hotline.
Sure. Yes.
We can check that during the break, and then we'll let you know when we come back. So give me a little thumbnail sketch of how you got involved in this as an activist.
Ah, well, over 13 years ago now, UNC put on two conferences
right.
on human trafficking. And I knew nothing about it. A friend of mine was going, suggested I come along. So I did. It was a fascinating conference with many speakers from all over the world. And I sat at lunch next to a woman who had been trafficked and had escaped. And I was so angry by what she told me about her experiences
yeah.
as a trafficked woman. She was from, I think it was El Salvador, and she came here on the promise of a job as a nanny, and it didn't turn out that way at
right.
all. She was imprisoned in an apartment in New York and eventually escaped. And she was
right.
highly articulate, very beautiful, seemingly educated woman who spoke at the conference. She's been interviewed by the New York Times. I mean, many of these people are quite impressive if they can get away.
Was she English speaking at the time she was?
I don't know that
this happened.
I don't know that. Her English was quite good when I met her.
Yeah, yeah, and charming and lovely. And,
yes, uh-huh.
and just, you know, grabbed up and basically reduced to this to trying to stay alive. You know,
that's right. Many of them don't live very.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure, because I'm sure that this is a pretty dicey group of people to be around, people who would hold you in this environment. And, I mean, the other thing is, it is so amazing. We remember these cases of young girls who were kidnapped, who were discovered to be living in this suburban neighborhood in Cleveland, having children by their kidnapper, and this went on for years and years and years, and the next-door neighbors had no idea
about
it.
That's right.
It really makes you want to, you know, wander your neighborhood and make sure you really know everybody there. Or maybe it makes you not want to. I mean, it can be a little bit scary. I mean, it's hard to know how to begin to approach learning about it. So what we're going to do is we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to start talking about kind of a step-by-step approach of how to become more aware of what we should be looking for. And if we see it, what should we do about it? Don't go anywhere. We're talking to Margaret Dardis about human trafficking. It's it's an amazingly broad problem, and we just have to stop being quiet about it. We have to speak up. That's what we have to do. So we are going to speak up, and we're going to do that right after this break here on 97.9 FM, 1360 AM, WCHL. Don't go away. We'll be right back. And we're back from our break. Thanks for joining us here on the Water Cooler. I'm joined by Margaret Dardis, who is the author of Brutal Silence, a must-read book. This is a work of fiction, correct?
That's right.
That's right. And you wrote this book. This book is also, it's about human trafficking.
That's right.
So, boy, when you take on a topic, you are all in, mm-hmm. right?
I am.
Okay. So, and this is tell me where everybody can buy this book.
Well, it's forthcoming. It'll be on Amazon soon.
Oh, it's not on Amazon yet?
Not yet.
Oh, my goodness. It's going to be on there like in a minute, though, right? Okay. And now you have, before we forget, we'll mention it now, we'll mention it at the end. You have an event coming up on March 6th, and this is at St. Thomas More at what time, 7 p.m. or 6 p.m.?
The event is at 7 p.m. The event's called It's Real, It's Here, a program to raise awareness of human trafficking. At 7 o'clock, we'll have three speakers talking about how victims are lured into trafficking, how some organizations are trying to save them, and what the laws are that combat human trafficking.
Right, and you can ask Margaret about her book when you're there. You can get your picture taken. You probably take a selfie of you and Margaret in her book. I'm just saying, you know, we authors have to stick together. You know how this is. So, so we were going to talk about the warning signs. You know, what are we looking for in spotting human trafficking? This does remind me so much of the rise of awareness of child abuse. When I was growing up, there was a family in our neighborhood, and I really genuinely only realized in retrospect as an adult that what we were seeing was a very abusive father who was controlling his family, beating the dog openly in the front yard. This was a way of controlling the family. This mm-hmm. wasn't really about the dog. But of course, as a
poor
child,
dog.
You know, we're looking at that saying, yeah. Why are you so mean to your dog? If you don't like dogs, you shouldn't have a dog. I mean, what is your problem, man? Mm-hmm. And, you know, the police would be at their house sometimes. And this was, you know, from a child's perspective, I don't know what my parents thought about this. I really never talked to them about it. But I, from a child's perspective, I really honestly can say this wasn't like in my world. This was a couple of houses down. These were just people that we didn't know. And it just seemed, it seemed odd and it seemed off to me. But in retrospect, of course, I realized that the kids didn't play with other kids in the neighborhood. We never went to their house. They never came to our house. I don't remember any kid in our neighborhood. I knew a lot of kids in my neighborhood, and I didn't know anybody who knew those kids. And they always seemed sad to me. They always seemed to isolate themselves and seem dejected. They were very separate in school. They sat separately and together on the bus. You know, all of these things that I look at it now as an adult and I go, aha, well, there it is. But I didn't know that as a kid. I think a lot of people didn't know that in the 70s and mm-hmm. the late 60s. So what are the things that we should be looking for now as we're, you know, you're in a restaurant, you're in these public places, and you see something that just strikes you as being off?
I think there are parallels with your story because often the victims of human trafficking won't make eye contact.
Right.
They seem to be ashamed. There are often people who don't have control of any money or their own identification. They don't, like the
right.
like the two
right.
Guys on the plane with me, they don't know where they are really.
Mm-hmm.
They aren't allowed to speak up for themselves, or they don't speak up for themselves. And there's a real fear for a lot of these people because the traffickers will take their papers away if they have them.
Right.
They'll threaten their families. They'll threaten them physically. They're often battered.
Right. And all of that serves to repress them from having normal human interactions like you know, what floor do you want on the elevator? They're probably reluctant about even answering.
That's right.
The most common chit-chat questions that you have with a stranger.
Yeah, like, they want to look.
I wonder why the bus is late, and you know, and their overseer is discouraging them from answering that kind of question.
And is often right there.
Yeah.
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 Well, there's a story of the flight attendant on Alaska Airlines that's been carried on the news various places recently.
Right.
All flight attendants now in the U.S. Have mandatory training in recognizing human trafficking victims.
Which is
very encouraging.
Fantastic.
It'd be nice if it were worldwide. Right now, it's only in the U.S.
Right.
Well, this flight attendant apparently had training. She saw a teenager on her flight sitting with a much older, well-dressed man. The teenager, by her description, looked like hell, like she'd been through hell. Her hair was dirty. She had visible bruises. She wouldn't look at the flight attendant, and the man wouldn't allow her to talk to the flight attendant.
Yeah.
So this attendant was very sharp. She put a note in the women's restroom to the girl. She then managed to get the girl to go to the restroom.
Right.
And the note said, "Do you need help?" And the girl wrote, "Help me."
Yes.
Now, the flight attendant did what we were all advised to do, and that is not intervene directly. She went to the pilot, who radioed ahead to law enforcement, and they were there waiting for the
both
of them at the gate.
Right.
Since then, the girl was then freed. She's apparently a college student now, and the flight attendant has stayed in touch with her, which is a very nice story.
That's fantastic.
It would be great if all stories were like that.
Right.
Unfortunately, many of them are not.
Right.
But the flight attendant did exactly the right thing. She knew what to look for. She notified.
And she probably had not had this training.
She may or may not have.
She just did this because she was smart.
That's right. But she is now participating in training. She appears in training sessions talking to other flight attendants.
Right. And this came up, we were talking off air, this came up probably around the Super Bowl because apparently high-profile events like that tend to increase this type of trafficking, especially for sex workers. Is that right?
That's right. And so there was training of all flight attendants or airline people going through Houston at the time of the Super Bowl. And this airline attendant spoke at one of those training sessions.
Well, that's a great opportunity. You have to go where the crowd is. And, you know, it's kind of like how social media has changed our way of thinking of platforms for sharing information. And it's been a great thing for WCHL, that the multiple platforms, because even though we know that the whole world really should flock to Chapel Hill to listen to WCHL, not everybody can do that all the time. People travel for various reasons, and it's a wonderful thing to be able to listen into the radio, no matter where you are, Alaska, Europe, Australia, anywhere, and listen to, you know, the weekend water cooler, whatever. But all of these platforms means that there are many, many different ways of imagining and inventing how you communicate with people. And all of, you know, that story reminded me of a woman calling a 911 operator and pretending that she was ordering a pizza. And the 911 operator figured out that she was in danger and sent the police instead of a pizza. Mm-hmm. So, you know, these are some creative things. This is what you have to do to try to intervene. But in this case, as you say, the thing to do is to call law enforcement to, I guess, be as observant as you can about as many details as possible. So, for example, the fact that one person is well-dressed and the other, you know, it looks like she's been sleeping outdoors or something, that doesn't make sense. Why would they be traveling together, and why would one person ever prohibit another person from speaking or being spoken to in particular? That kind of control is not normal. That doesn't make any sense.
I think we need to be vigilant for things that just don't make sense.
Right. And, you know, what we were talking about, too, is that, you know, if you get on an elevator with someone and they make you uncomfortable and you're trying to avoid being assaulted, whether it's a sexual assault or not, if you have that gut feeling that you're uncomfortable, get off the elevator. Either take the stairs or wait for the next elevator. You know, you don't want to get into an enclosed space with someone who you feel very uncomfortable with. Your common sense tells you that, and you should listen to your common sense and not dismiss it because you don't want to be rude.
Right. And say something to somebody. If
right.
that person is on an elevator, somebody else could fall victim.
Exactly. Like, you know, why is that guy in the elevator? He was on that elevator yesterday. He doesn't seem to be going anywhere. You need to speak up about that because,
right.
You know, you're probably protecting somebody else from being assaulted. So we're gonna take another quick break, and we're going to be back with Margaret and the author of Brutal Silence, which is not what you're going to hear on 1360 WCHL 97.9 FM. We're going to be back with more talk and no silence right after this. Okay, we're back with Margaret Dardis. We're talking about human trafficking and where we are in this problem. And do you feel like the problem is still kind of that the curve is kind of still going up, that people are really just learning about it, even though this has been around a long time, right?
Yes, I'm sure it has.
It must be an ancient problem of men exploiting women to start with.
Right, but there are men exploited in this as well, and children.
Yes.
So
that's the one I can't stand. It makes me want to hit something.
Well, of course. And I mean, and the most vulnerable populations include children.
Right.
In a crisis situation or particularly runaways are victims. The statistic is 1 out of every 5 runaways falls victim to human traffickers.
Oh, I can believe that pretty easily.
I'm surprised it's that low, actually.
Yeah, I mean, talk about being powerless in a situation.
Right, right.
You know, if you're 14 and you don't have a driver's license
and
you don't have papers
and no money,
you don't have money and you might be fleeing an abusive environment at home too.
That's
so
right.
You're thinking that you're going off to do something better for yourself, but you can end up being trapped.
That's right.
Pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty quickly. This doesn't take, you know, years of rampant abuse and grooming and all of these things. It can happen to someone pretty quickly that they fall into this vulnerability, right?
That's right. Yes.
Yeah. This is not good news.
No. But, you know, in terms of whether it's an increasing problem, the statistics show that it's increasing.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly our vigilance, the development in legislation is very encouraging.
Right.
The number of reported cases has gone up. You know, as in any case like this, the fact that we know more about it leads you to wonder whether there's more of it or we're just getting much smarter about the whole thing and we're really addressing the problem.
And this doesn't, please tell me, because I can't stand to be wrong about this. Please tell me that this does not cut across partisan lines, because it shouldn't.
That it does not cut across partisan lines?
Please tell me it is not a partisan issue.
It's not a partisan issue.
Good.
It truly isn't.
And it doesn't cut that way in terms of...
No. I mean, legislation has been sponsored by both parties. It's not something anybody can be in favor of. And it's really not hard to be against it. So one thing we can do is encourage our legislators and our policymakers to pay attention to this issue.
Right.
The only problem is that there are so many different issues that our legislators, that policymakers, law enforcement have to pay attention to, that this is just one of them.
Yeah. And you know, when a constituency that you're looking to benefit from writing a law is a constituency that is vulnerable and poor and can't get you reelected.
That's right.
Probably can't
we'll never vote. Yes.
Probably can't assert their voting rights. Obviously not with kids, but even with the adults involved, you know, if they don't know where they are and they aren't citizens and, you know, all of the problems that are in this that swirl around, it is strictly a matter, it seems to me, of the moral authority of our country, at least, to say, well, listen, we don't look at who wins, who loses. Every American loses if this is going on in our country. We have stuff in the Constitution about slavery, if I recall, that says
and
it's
this is
bad.
Modern-day slavery.
It's absolutely is just straight-up slavery.
Purely and simply. I mean, we can get horrified about the 19th century and should.
Yes.
And before, but this is slavery, too.
But we try to do that looking back at
it's
history.
Easy to read history and get upset. But
exactly.
This is going on now. And the fact that the victims are disenfranchised makes it all the more important for us who do have a vote and who do have a say to speak up.
So when I make a call, and if I'm calling the trafficking hotline at 888-373-7888, that's a lot of eights in there, by the way. What can I gather for information to tell them that would be the most useful? Is it time and place things, or is it describing the characteristics of the person who I think is being subjugated in this way, or what's the best information for me?
I would think that giving them information that would enable them to alert law enforcement and then find this situation would be the most important. Where have you seen it? What have you seen?
Right. If you've observed a pattern, maybe.
Right. If you've seen it over a period of time, if it's in the same place.
Right. It's like the creepy guy in the elevator. Why is he in that elevator?
And
every
if he's
day?
Been there, you know, every day this week, well, that's pretty
useful.
I mean,
where does he work that's nearby? Right. I've never seen him before. I don't know why he's there. Something's wrong.
But what you're doing is trying to help them intervene. So the more information you can give them along those lines, the better.
Right. And I guess one thing I would say, you know, my dad's a lawyer. I love lawyers.
Thank
you. I have good friends who are lawyers, as you know. We have a mutual friend who's a lawyer. Hi, Sandy Moulton. And I would say that one of the things that I've always known growing up and have always admired about the legal perspective of how attorneys think is that I was taught to, with a matter like this, reporting what you saw in a traffic accident, for example, you don't need to figure out whether or not what you know is the most important fact to contribute in reporting what you saw. You need to report what you saw. You let the police figure out what the total picture is. That's their job, not yours. If you witness something, you describe as accurately as you can what you saw and hand it over, and then you've done your part. You're not a detective here.
That's right.
Right? And you have no way of knowing if your piece of the puzzle is the piece that was missing in a situation. And it can easily be true that something that you think was obscure and irrelevant and, well, that can't mean anything, you know. So I saw that guy drop something in a trash can as he walked out of the building. So what? It's a trash can. He dropped trash in it probably, right? Well, it's a guy matching that description and, you know, he was leaving right after a shooting occurred and it might have been a gun he dropped in there. And if you can say that you saw him at that time, even though you're not sure what
do
you
something.
Saw,
mm-hmm.
that can be something. So you really can't. And I watch too many crime shows, but a lot of times I think when people are trying to convince themselves to stay out of it and mind their own business and these wonderful things that they think they're doing that are noble, like I'm minding my own business, it's really a way of convincing yourself to stay out of something that's uncomfortable. And there's virtually nothing about this topic that isn't uncomfortable.
That's true. It's a very uncomfortable topic.
But I think that the thing that comes to my mind right away is, what if that was your child? What if that was your son or daughter who was in this terrible trouble? And what hung in the balance of them getting out of that trouble is whether or not a stranger was willing to say, officer, I've just seen this thing. It doesn't look right to me. I don't know what's going on. You look into it, but something looks wrong there. There have been many, many cases, I'm sure, that have been interrupted, where abusive behavior of many varieties has been interrupted that way, right?
I'm sure there are. I mean, and there have been arrests in the state more in recent years than prosecutions. And they're prosecutions carried out by law enforcement after drug raids.
Right.
We don't know how law enforcement found out about these activities.
Right.
But it's easier for law enforcement to do something if they have tips.
Right.
People who are vigilant.
Yeah.
And
this is something law enforcement and journalism has in common.
Yes,
that they
rely on ordinary people to be vigilant.
Yeah, just to say, look, you know, I don't want to get into your story, or I don't want to, you know, I don't want to get into a mess with the police department. But I saw this guy and he didn't look right to me either, and I saw him right around the time that bank was robbed, and you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. People report things like that all the time, and you know, I don't know where we would be if you couldn't accept information that way. Mm-hmm. As a journalist, you'd be out of business.
That's right.
Without a doubt. So,
and then I think both journalists and law enforcement then know what to do with the information. They know how to investigate it and determine whether
right.
it's something they need to pay attention to or not. We don't. So,
right,
yeah,
right.
So
I mean, likewise, as a journalist, you know, certainly what I would do is, and what I did was, you know, I have to ask this person, okay, so why were you there? And, you know, you have to evaluate, are they trying to, is this a bad boyfriend trying to, you know, get somebody mm-hmm. in trouble?
Right.
Or, you know, do they have an axe to grind? Or are they just saying, hey, look, I saw this, I'm just telling you, and I don't care what happens with it, I'm just handing it over. I'm trying to do the right thing. You have to test them a little bit. Mm-hmm. Like I told you, you know, in journalism, if your mother says she loves you, check it out. And I know that your mother loved you, and I know that my mother loved me, and everybody loves WCHL. We're going to be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Weekend Water Cooler at 97.9 FM, 1360 AM. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back with Margaret Dardis, and she is the author of Brutal Silence, about human trafficking. Margaret, let's talk about the event on March 6th one more time. Now, we have presenters, we have exhibitors at this event, and they're going to have all kinds of resources and materials for folks to learn about this problem. And if you are a person or persons who are affiliated with a local service organization, Kiwanis, Rotary Club, anything of that nature, really. Or if your business is looking to do an outreach project to raise awareness about this would probably be a good opportunity for them to come and learn more and get some materials, do some training with their own employees and with folks. With the university sitting right in the middle of town, there are so many people affiliated with UNC who do so much training and educating and exposing us to the wider world. This is something I absolutely adore about having this gigantic world-class university right in the middle of everything in town, is that we have such a variety of people here with very different perspectives who know what's going on in other countries. There's international law involved here. We were talking about the UN is getting involved, and there are people with experiences from all over the world who probably could really teach us a lot. I hope that many of them will be at this event. And your book will be available.
That's right.
For sale at this event.
That's right.
And don't forget, everybody, get your selfie made with Margaret with her book. And she'll probably even autograph it for you. I'm pretty sure she would do that. I think she's cool like that.
Well, it's up to all of us as citizens to learn about human trafficking.
Right.
The more we know about it, the more likely we are to recognize it.
Right.
We can support our legislators, as I said before. We can support not-for-profits. And also many of the people, in fact, all of the organizations who are either presenting or exhibiting
right.
here are not for profits. They don't do this to make any kind of money. They do it out of the goodness of their hearts.
Right.
And they can use all the support they can get. They can use volunteer support.
Right.
They can also certainly use financial support. And they're in business to educate you and let you know
right.
what it's all about. So I encourage anybody who's listening to go to the event. It's at St. Thomas More's Church. It will be on March 6th. The formal presentation will be at 7 o'clock. The exhibitors will start, will be open at 6 o'clock. It's in the Friends and Family Hall of St. Thomas More Church on 940 Carmichael Street in Chapel Hill.
Right. And you can go at 6. You can go look around at
That's
all
right.
the exhibits,
mm-hmm.
and then you can go listen to the presentations.
That's right, at 7.
After you've kind of collected
right.
some background information, so you get a little more out of it that way. And the proceeds for your book, you're not going to build your Malibu house on the proceeds from your book, although maybe you could.
wishful thinking. But whatever proceeds, if any, I make will go to an organization called Make Way Partners, which
mm-hmm.
Operates primarily in sub-Saharan Africa, rescuing victims there. we have many organizations in the United States that are able to raise money. Not even fewer people are worried about sub-Saharan Africa because it seems further away.
How did you come to choose that organization, just curiously, I'll ask?
Because I knew people who were involved with it. Linnea Smith, for example, Julia Grumbles, and various other peoples who are in Chapel Hill.
And Linnea helped organize this event,
helped organize – no, she helped organize the UNC events where I learned about human trafficking
about this,
in the first place, yes.
But I know she's going to show up to this event because she's cool like that. So so some of the exhibitors, let's talk about them. This is going to be the North Carolina Council for Women's Project.
It's called COPE.
That is COPE, C-O-P-E, the UNC School of Social Work Project No Rest, which is a residential recovery program for trafficked boys.
No, that's the one in Greensboro.
They are, I'm sorry, right. The program is called Restore One, is the residential recovery program for trafficked boys from Greenville, North Carolina. So they're coming in from Greenville. Mm-hmm. Good for them.
Well, one of the presenters is coming from Vancouver, Washington.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, Sharon Langsford from Shared Hope International. And they raise awareness around the world. And she's going to be talking about how victims are lured into human trafficking.
So you'll have Shannon Langford there. You'll have Carrie Ramsey of A Safe Place.
In Wilmington.
In Wilmington.
And
okay.
They have a halfway house where they rehabilitate victims.
Great.
Girls.
And David, is it Schick?
Schick.
David Schick is a Chapel Hill police legal. What is a police legal advisor?
He's the lawyer for the Chapel Hill Police Department.
So he's a lawyer.
He's a lawyer, and he's going to be talking about law enforcement and legislation and efforts of that sort. And they'll all be available to answer questions.
And so he's going to be a really good guy to have some really good practical tips, I would think, about how individuals, just as an individual, if you see something and you want to report it, what is specifically step by step, what you can do, what you can look for, what the resources are. But also that if your organization wants to be sure that you're not hiring someone who is in the community under duress that you're not aware of as an employer, that you could protect yourself and protect your employees from exploitation like that. So he's going to be a good guy to listen to. A Schick lawyer.
That's right.
Schick. That's. I don't know why names always strike me a certain way.
It's a good name for a lawyer.
I'm just thinking that about 25 jokes are coming to my mind about a lawyer named Schick. So I'll just say attorney David Schick, I apologize for being stuck on your name, but I know that you're doing good work on behalf of the Chapel Hill PD and the community overall for this event. This is the very first time that St. Thomas More has sponsored an information session like this, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's the first event, and it was actually Sue Wolf was the first person who's a parishioner there who became interested in the subject, and she's been the driving force behind it. There are about 30 people from St. Thomas More Church who are helping to put this on, doing various different aspects of this.
Well, good for you, Sue. Good job. Good job. And St. Thomas More, I mean, they're just always doing good things. I've served on many boards in Chapel Hill and in Orange County, and it seems to me that I always seem to have some tangential relationship with somebody from St. Thomas More. Wonderful organization. They do great work, and I'll just say this. They show up. You know, sometimes community boards and people mean well, and they try to go to all the meetings and everything, but I like people who show up. That's how I am.
Well, I hope you'll show up on March 6th for this event at St. Thomas More Church.
I unfortunately am going to be returning from Florida, but people need to show up for this, and they need to buy your book. And so now what else are you working on now that the book is done? So what are you working on next?
Oh, I'm working on another book about the same protagonist, Alexandra Harrington, who was running in the first book, was running a clinic in Durham when she realized that human trafficking was not just in Mexico,
but
was here too.
That's right. The book is set in Durham.
Yes. Wow. I call it Dalton just to protect myself.
Okay.
But it is really Durham, and any thinly veiled as Durham.
Well, we're in on a secret now, yes. Boy. Yeah, when that one slips out.
Well, then she goes to New York, and it's about, she works for an international relief organization where she finds corruption and dirty dealing.
Oh, my.
Hmm.
All right,
everybody.
She's a busy
girl. She's a busy
girl, and she's going to be coming up. Do you have a title yet?
For the second one, I don't.
No, you don't.
But I'd love to hear any suggestions.
Well, we're going to have to stay tuned. You know, everybody's going to have to tweet those out to you or send them to you at www.margaretdardis.com. Margaret, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
It's a tough topic, but it's a lot of fun talking to you.
I enjoyed it. Thank you.
Great to be with you, and everybody have a great weekend. We're gonna queue it up again next week. So we'll see you again on the Weekend Water Cooler.